I'm talking to my friend Jürgen Franz, who plays in Germany in Hamburg in the orchestra there. And we're going to discuss a few things like what it's like to play in a German orchestra and how things function. Okay, Jürgen, tell me which orchestras you've played in.
I started, my first professional job was during my studies in Frankfurt. I played in an orchestra which was very small. This was an orchestra in Gießen, which was around 50 people playing there, but they play the usual stuff like the operas and ballets, and especially you played a lot of operetten.
Yeah.
And playing these operetten was very difficult because you had a lot of signs before the notes, so you have to really be very concentrated to playing this music because this is really difficult.
What do you mean you had signs before that?
Signs, these Kreuze and B's, you know, to have a lot of...
Oh, to
you play a lot
to
of
repeat things and...
Yes, repeat things, staccatos and all this stuff. And you have... you have to be very concentrated to play that.
On your toes. And who was the conductor of that orchestra?
Oh...
Well, it doesn't matter.
I know the conductor which came very new. He said, and it was a time of changing when I was playing there. It was David Devalier, who was a new conductor. He was a conductor from South Africa. I think he's from South Africa, yes. And then after this time in Gießen, this was during my studies. I studied in Stuttgart with Jean-Claude Gérard. And during this time when I'm studying, I was playing in the orchestra in Gießen, and I get some money for my first gold flute. And after that, I get my really first audition, and I win the first audition. It was in Bielefeld.
Yeah.
And in Bielefeld, I was solo piccolo with first flute, which was a very rare combination. And I learned all the scores from first flute to the piccolo. And it was really a nice time in learning a lot of pieces. Mm-hmm. I played the Rosenkavalier, the Arabella from Strauss.
Yeah.
It was the first time I played the Wagner opera, Tannhäuser. It was in Bielefeld. Of course, we don't play with four harps like we do now in Bayreuth. We played with two harps.
Yeah.
But it was very nice to listen to the music. And it was the first time when we had good singers there. And a lot of these singers came from America.
Mm-hmm.
They was very young, and they was one of their first engagements in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And the conductor there, which was Rainer Koch, he has a good taste for young singers.
Mm-hmm.
And now the how was the name? Robert Dean Smith. He sang the Tristan last year in Bayreuth,
mm-hmm.
and I met him the first time in Bielefeld.
Yeah.
And then this summer we talked about the time in Bielefeld.
He sang Tristan.
And he sang the Tristan in Bayreuth. Yes. And he was very good. He's really. And you could hear that in Bielefeld in this time that his technique was really good.
His
singing technique. And I said, this guy is really good in technique. And I said, when his voice is really ready, I think he's a really good singer. And now he's ready, and he is really great, Tristan.
That's
really
nice.
Great.
That's nice.
Yes. And then I tried for the first flute in Stuttgart Philharmonic Orchestra, mm-hmm. and I got this job. And I was, I have, no, it's... One and a half years, nearly 2 years, I was in Stuttgart and was playing just symphonies there. We don't had any operas and we just played symphonies. Most of the time we played the Brahms and the Beethoven symphonies because this orchestra is traveling through Baden-Württemberg, which is one of the small countries in Germany.
States,
yes. And we was responsible for the musicality playing in Baden-Württemberg.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody get music there and has a chance to come tour.
You were responsible for bringing the music to the people.
To the people.
On tour. Every day.
Every day. Not every day, but you was a lot of in the bus and in the train. And it's a really big traveling orchestra. They have not the big tours, but the small tours, and they really have to travel a lot. And then after that, I get the chance to play as just Aushilfe. What do you say, Aushilfe?
Substitute
in the NDR Symphony in Hamburg as a solo piccolo. And I play the piccolo since I was a small boy, because my father had a wind band, a marching band, kind of marching band, and I played the piccolo every day next to my flute. So for me, it's no problem playing flute or piccolo. It doesn't matter to me. And since they were searching for a piccolo, and they didn't get somebody who plays Song of the Earth from Mahler, and Thomas Hampson was singing, and I said, oh, I really would like to do it, but unfortunately, I have a rehearsal. Can I come one day later? And the chief conductor in this time was Christoph Eschenbach, and the flute section was going to ask him if it's possible that we have a substitute which can't rehearse the first rehearsal, just arrives the next day. And he said, do you think he can do it? And the flute section said, yes, he can. And I arrived, and I was very impressed from this orchestra, because everything was... It's like sitting in a big Mercedes, which 12 carriages.
Well, it is a Mercedes of Germany, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
We should tell the listeners the NDR.
NDR Symphony is Norddeutsche Rundfunk, yes.
So we have North German Radio Orchestra.
Yes, we have the radio orchestras in Germany, and which are the high-level orchestra. Of course, we have the Berlin Philharmonic, we have the Dresdner Opera, the Staatskapelle Dresden, the Gewandhaus, which are the historic orchestras. And after the war, there was built new orchestras, which mostly was from the radio stations. And the special thing with the NDR Symphony was that Hans-Schmidt Itterstedt, the conductor to this time, took a lot of people from the Berlin Philharmonic, the first violin, the first cello, the first viola, and the second group leader from the second violins from the Berlin Philharmonic. And they really had a perfect first row in the orchestra. And this is the reason why the NDR Symphony Orchestra has this old German tradition. And it's a little bit different to other orchestras. We have a really deep German sound.
How would you describe the tradition?
The tradition is, if you compare it with other orchestras, we have a really mixed and blended woodwind sound. Of course, a piccolo player sometimes is a little bit above all that, sorry. But usually we try to blend the woodwinds. So if you have a line, for example, in a Schumann symphony, which starts on top of the flutes and going down to the bassoons, usually we try really to set this one line and not going to four sections, so the flute, so the oboes, the clarinet, and to the fagot. So we have one line that we really not want. We don't, of course, we are really good players, but we don't want to be soloists when we are in the orchestra. Of course, you have if you have the time and you have a solo, you have to show what you can do. But if you don't have it, you really have to figure out what is your place in the section and how loud you play, how you mix in the section, how important you are, and also with intonation, that you recognize which line do you have. Especially when you have accords and you play, for example, second flute, you don't have, most of the time you're playing the third of an accord. And then you have to recognize, if I have the major third or the minor third, that you can change a little bit the intonation. This is very difficult in this way, that you really get a good sound of an accord.
When you change the intonation, who do you change it to or with?
This is a very difficult question, because nobody with question, I think the intonation in an orchestra is one of the really biggest challenges what you have. And nobody is right, never. And the question is what you get from the player before.
That's right.
So you have to listen really carefully what the guy is doing, which plays before you, especially when you play a kind of Shostakovich symphony. There's a big flute solo, and maybe the flute is ending too high or too low in pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And then you, if you have to if you have to follow him and mm-hmm. finish the line on the piccolo with a very high
yeah.
note, you really have to fit to the first flute.
Of course.
And you have to take the intonation. If maybe he's too sharp or maybe he's too flat, but
wherever he is,
you have to be
there. You have to be.
Yes.
That's it.
And this kind of being careful and listening really careful what the others are doing, this is a big thing in these orchestras.
How do you think people can develop intonation?
Intonation is
practicing.
This is really difficult, and I try, and mostly if you have the possibility that you have another instrument in your house, for example, a piano, or what I say to my students is, if they have a tuning machine which makes sounds,
mm-hmm.
that you make on these, that they should play one note, for example, a low C, and
yeah.
then you make a major chord on this low C. You play the E, then the G,
mm-hmm.
and then listen to compare it to the bass of the harmony.
Right.
So then you develop a little bit of feeling where it's also a kind of question of color.
Mm-hmm.
A special accord like C major needs a little bit a low E as a major third.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds better.
Mm-hmm.
And you can develop this with another instrument. If you have two flute players in the family, like you, you're really happy. But this is, I think this is really the question of that you always have to listen to the base of the harmony, not only to your melodic line
mm-hmm.
which you play. Usually in the violins, we often have the problem that the violins playing very melodical. So
mm-hmm.
if they have, for example, if they play in G major,
mm-hmm.
they always take a very sharp F sharp.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's light tone, I don't know, light tone.
A leading tone.
A leading tone to the G again. And they take it very sharp to be close to the ground tone
mm-hmm.
from the harmony. And this is sometimes, and this is now a big challenge of a piccolo player and a flute player. Flute players and piccolo players often are connected with the lines of the first violins. And if you play a melodic line with the violins, you have another intonation to play than if you are in the woodwinds. In the woodwinds
mm-hmm.
You don't play in a melodical way.
Yeah.
And if you play with the violins, you play in a melodical way. And also with intonation.
By melodical way, do you mean in a singing way? Whereas if you sing the scale of G major,
yes,
you would sing the leading note a little bit sharper, or would you? How would you do that?
It depends on what you are used to listen to, I think.
Well, now, what I'm trying to say is when these guys play on the violin, they don't have frets and they don't
yes.
have keys like we do.
Yes, exactly.
They have to listen and to get it right.
Yes.
So therefore, I would be more inclined to believe they're F sharp.
The F sharp is maybe the F sharp. If we have two F sharps, maybe from the woodwinds and from the violins,
yeah.
I think in a harmonic way, the F sharp from the woodwinds is right. But in the melodic way, the violins are right. So this is really difficult. If you play as a soloist, you can
yeah.
play in a melodical way.
Mm.
And it sounds more like a singer, of course. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What about flutes? You play a landel.
I play a landel since I'm 21 years old. Yes.
I know, it's a wonderful flute. And I always admire your playing because when you play it, you sound like you really know this flute.
Yes. This is a very nice story about that flute, because this flute was bought from Hans-Udo Heinzmann, which is now my colleague in Hamburg. And he bought it 1979.
Mm-hmm.
And when he bought his first house, he needed money.
Yes.
Unfortunately. So he sold the flute to my teacher, which was in this time was Paul Dahme. He is solo flute in the Frankfurt Opera.
Mm-hmm.
And to that time I was student from Paul Dahme. And so when he taught me, and we practice a lot of these Mui studies, and he plays really often, and I was all the time impressed of his sound. He has a really nice sound, and I said, "This is really nice sound, and this is a nice flute." And then he bought a house.
He did.
he bought a house. This man in Frankfurt, and this flute player in Frankfurt, Paul Dahme, he has to sell flutes because he bought a big house and he needs money. So he had a few of flutes to sell, and he asked me maybe if I have interest in one of these flutes. And I already had one of my first Landell flute was a 14 karat flute with silver mechanic, which I played in your master classes in the 90s. And then I had the chance to buy that flute, and I said, "This is really a good flute."
Yes,
and I said, "I think I buy it." And this was a lot of money for me to that time.
So you sold your house?
No, I sold my old flute and get the new one. And I'm really happy with that flute, and I really think that I arrived home.
Yeah.
In a way. And I try a lot of other flutes and still looking for new things, and I really but at the end I think it's also nice and I'm really feeling at home. So I don't change so much.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes I have two head joints, which one is made by Albert Cooper and one is made by Landell with a Cooper lip plate, and sometimes I change the head joints, but most of the time I don't change.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same with my wife, I don't change.
Now, when you looking at your progress on the flute, what exercises do you think made the biggest impression?
One exercise which I practiced a lot during the time in Bielefeld, this was a special time for me because I was playing there in the orchestra 4 years, and I really would like to get a better job during that time. And I practiced a lot, really a lot, which means I had a rehearsal in the morning and I practiced in the afternoon 4 to 5 hours, and I had to play an opera in the evening again. So sometimes I had really a lot of time with playing flute and practicing the flute. And during that time I practiced a lot of these Reichert studies. And I tried to figure out what we spoke before with the intonation things and finding colors of keys. And I think this helped me a lot.
And when you practice these Reichert, did you practice them slowly or quick or...?
Not quick and not too slow.
Right, okay.
Because if you play them too quick, I think you can't really listen to the harmonic ground.
Yeah.
And if you play them too slow, you lose the melodic line. So we are again in the conflict of melodical and harmonical feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is really, especially for an orchestra player, this is one of the big challenges which you have to find a solution for.
Yeah.
So you always have to change between melodical and harmonical situations.
Right. Now, with Gerard, Jean-Claude,
yes,
we were in the same class in the conservatoire, you know.
Nice picture.
Yes. And tell me about his school of teaching.
Yes.
Or tell the listeners.
So, very good thing for me was with Jean-Claude Gerard was I was maybe not a really good flute player to that time when I come to the class to Gérard. And he started to show me very clearly what I have to do and what I have to practice. And we had some French players in the class, which was really good. Mm-hmm. And this is what I recognized when I studied in Frankfurt, that I really have to change, because the standard in Frankfurt was not as good as in Stuttgart. And so I changed to Stuttgart and recognized that I really have to practice. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I was playing in the orchestra in Gießen, as I said, and I was, to that time, I was traveling a lot between Frankfurt, where I lived, Gießen, which is 80 kilometers to the north, and Stuttgart, which is 200 kilometers to the south. And when I was 22, I had already 50,000 kilometers on my
car,
each year. So I had a little bit lost of time with driving the car and not practicing.
Yeah, time lost.
Time lost. And I take this time, or I took this time when I come to the orchestra in Bielefeld. Mm-hmm. Then I take the time, and this was a time when I really practiced a lot. Mm-hmm. And the good thing with Gérard was that he showed very clearly what to practice and mm-hmm. how you be organized. If you're studying a piece, for example, how you start, mm-hmm. that you just read the text.
Mm-hmm.
Then that you see the dynamics mm-hmm. after that. And if you fit everything together, then mm-hmm. you can start to interpret music or to yes. make nice things. One of the nice things I remember all the time is what he used to say is a note before a breath should be very intensive. And he has this special French-German dialect. And it's very funny because I now start to teach in Hamburg and I'm telling my students exactly the same sentence with a French dialect.
Now, what studies and what scales and how did you do the scales and studies?
We in Stuttgart, we studied first, we had to do the 17 daily exercises, Gobert, Tabanel, then the Moïse exercises, the étude. I think daily exercise is the same size of
exercise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Just a second.
So we stopped. Should I stop it?
No, it's okay. Go ahead.
We was talking about the exercise journalier.
Yeah.
And what I remember one thing too. That was in the lessons of him. He listened to all the studies
mm-hmm.
till they was playing ready. Because I heard to some classes of other flute teachers and say the students play the first 10 rows mm-hmm. of the exercise and then they said, okay, the rest is...
But he listened to the whole
thing. But he listened to whole the entire thing.
Yeah, this is the way it was in the conservatoire. We had to play.
Yes.
The whole entire thing. There was no just playing.
Yes. I think he took a lot of this style.
And yeah.
Another thing was, which I now also make in Hamburg, is that we have all the time a class. So there was all mm-hmm. the time sitting a few people there with who was listening to
auditors.
You.
Auditors.
Yes. And this was very nice because you learned to play in front of people. And now in my class, I had, I'm now doing the same thing. And I have one of this of my students is a Japanese girl. And she's a good flute player, but she's very nervous when she's in the situation of in front of people. And now she's going to use to play in front of people mm-hmm. more and more. Mm-hmm. And I think it will help her.
Yeah, no, it's a very good thing because it also makes a bit of concurrence against the other people.
Exactly.
I remember this when I went to the Paris Conservatoire and we were fixing up a time to come to the class. And everybody was dying to play at 8 o'clock in the morning. And me being Irish and whatnot, 8 o'clock in the morning, these guys are mad. So I, 12 o'clock, I'm okay. But then I realized what was happening because I had to get there at 10 and listen.
Yes.
And each one who played would play a bit quicker than the other one. So by the time I got to me, I had to play real quick to keep in the...
Yes, exactly. And this is, I think this is really a good way. And I now start, I figured out that the situation in my class, for example, was very friendly during the students. And I thought, no, it's too friendly for me. I think I have to make a little bit more concurrence here. And then I said, okay, for next week, everybody's playing the same study. And I take your Böhm studies, and I said, okay, everybody's playing number one.
Yeah.
From the Böhm studies. And since that time, everybody is there at 9 or at 8, and the class starts at 9 in the morning, and they have to be ready and play that. And it's good for the, for them.
Yes, it is. It is. Now, what was his approach to studies, etudes?
I think the most thing he was looking for was to play them perfect in a technical way. It wasn't so important for him to play it in a musicality way. But play, if you make more than 2 or 3 chords, he comes to your music stand, closed the music and said, "We see us next week." In a very charming French way. But you understand very sure what he wants to have.
He wants to have it perfect. Yeah, sure.
Yes. And so this is what I'm trying to say is what you understand very clearly. That of course the way to live as a musician is very nice. You travel, you see a lot of places, but you have to be organized really professionally. And this is what you learn from him very well and very fast. Because if you don't learn him, he will really be very clear to you.
Yes, yeah. Tell me about the German school of flute playing.
I can't tell you so much about the German flute school because I'm educated as a French flute player. Because my teachers was influenced by the French flute school, and of course Gérard, he is French. He still is. Yes,
yeah,
he's more French than he didn't change, and he's more French than the French people. But the thing is with the French flute school, I don't know with the other flute players, but for me, some days I recognize that there is a door which was not possible for me to open. I all the time tried to play well and well educate, but I didn't have the possibility to show emotions on my flute. And then until that time, Rampal was my big hero, and
sure, mine
still is, of course.
Yeah.
And but I recognize for me that I was blocked in a way. And then I came to your class again. I was in your class the very first time. It was in 86, 1986. It was just one day in the casino in Lucerne.
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
Yes, I was 18.
Yeah.
I just had the possibility to drive the car. And since then I'm coming back in the early 90s. And there was, then I start to understand what I have to do. And then this was also the time when I was in Bielefeld and I practiced so much and I find out the colors and the possibilities on the flute. And then I recognized, there's something more than just playing perfect notes and just in time. And I'm still looking forward.
Still looking for the message.
No, sometimes I know the message, but to show the message to the people and to bring it to
another
the people,
thing.
This is a big thing.
Yeah.
And I think this is one of the biggest challenges for a musician, that you have to understand when you are going out on stage, that you have to speak and to show the people what you like to do.
What you can do.
And what you can do.
Yeah.
And it's not, of course, it's perfect to play in the best way, but if you have a small fault because of concentration or something, or I think it's not so important than the possibility to really speak to the people and show characters and really show the music. And I think this is a really big goal we should be looking for.
If a foreign student was coming to study in Germany, what advice would you give them to be prepared? How should they prepare, apart from learning German?
You are laughing, but this is one very important thing, to speak the German language. Because I have two Japanese students, and I don't speak Japanese. And some things are really difficult to explain in English for me, or in Japanese, of course. But this is one big thing, to learn the language your teacher is speaking. The other thing is that the European music, Beethoven, Mozart, Schumann, Brahms, this is a way of European, not European, it's German feeling. It's a way of German feeling. And this is also in the language. If you, for example, have the word Erdbeere, which means strawberry.
Yeah.
It's a very nice word because it's a berry from the earth.
Yes.
It's usually, if you translate it, it's an earth berry.
Yeah.
And in German you have the Erdbeere, which is a very nice description for the fruit you have. And these things are, I think, it's good to understand also for the music. That you get a feeling of this, of the German, it's not a philosophy, but it's a way of language, of feeling.
The German soul.
Yes. Sometimes it's a little bit dark, but...
Well, that's okay. You know, when I joined the Berlin Philharmonic, it was the first time I was really confronted with this Germanic thing that you were trying to describe. And when they played, it was amazing German, but fantastic, because there was something depth, there was a great depth in the music when they played, which no orchestra did. And everybody, when we went on tour to Berlin Philharmonic, to America, for example, and everywhere else, the critics were always astonished that this could happen.
Yes. This is... maybe one thing is that the German orchestras are not as perfect, maybe, as American orchestras. The American orchestras are really perfect, which in a technical sense.
Yeah, sure.
But what we have in Germany is that we have the feeling for the sound of the German music.
Yes.
And this is not a brilliant sound. This is a depth. Which we are searching for. And I think this is very difficult for me to explain. But if you once listen, or if you listen to German orchestra very often, you will understand it. And especially to orchestra like the Berlin Philharmonic, for example, or the Big Ray, or the Staatskapelle Dresden also, which was one of the big orchestras with Richard Wagner. He was very often in Dresden, was conducting there. And he likes the orchestra very much. And it's also in the Vienna Philharmonic. It's a German sound. Yeah. Maybe not the woodwinds, but the strings are really, really
They're great. Okay, is there anything else we need to talk about, you want to talk about? Anything that's on your heart that you need to tell everybody in the world?
Oh. There are a lot of things, maybe. But maybe since people should go to the church and listen in the church, maybe the people there can teach them better than me.
Okay. Jürgen, thank you very much.
Thank you, Jimmy.
Okay. I think we've done it.
Yes.
Bravo. Thank you.
Yes. It was difficult for me in English, but
it was very good. I think everybody understands.
I hope so.